My name is Melanie Sasertia. This is Class 2, titled The Grieving Process. What is this process that we are wired to do and that can save our hearts from misery? These are not steps. We don't move methodically from one to the next. No two grievers are the same. We all grieve differently. Some experience a lot of crying, tears that seem to never end. Others don't cry as much. Some wrestle with doubts, anger, or periods of depression. Others do not. It's important that we don't bring our judgment, our preconceived ideas, to the grieving heart. Unless we have personally experienced a significant loss, we have no idea what this is like. The grieving process begins with the loss itself, reality. Here are some examples: death of a loved one, death of a dream, for example, our marriage, our children, death of a season of life, caring for actively for our children, employment, death of a relationship, for example, divorce, Alzheimer, adoption, death of a plan, failure, not attaining the love or approval of a significant person, such as a parent, not being the person that we wish we had been, not getting what we want, loss of health due to illness, financial reversals, or the death of anything we need, want, or desire, good or bad. The next part of the grieving process is protest, basically saying, I don't want this to be true. One way we protest is simply by becoming numb or denying what is happening. Often when people lose a loved one, they often will say, this is surreal. Our emotions have not caught up with reality. We naturally don't want what has happened to be true. I believe this temporary anesthesia can be very helpful. It can enable us to plan funerals and get through some of the initial challenges we face with a loss. Another way to protest is by screaming. Some feel the need to do this. It is the natural protest against that which is bad. It is the anger phase of the grief process. As humans, we are looking for someone to blame. Some deal with anger towards the deceased, caregivers, and even God. Other grievers do not experience this anger. There are many unanswerable questions surrounding grief. Why were they killed? Where was God? Many doubts can arise. We all recognize this normal, common protest. What is less recognizable is the protest and bargaining over less tangible losses. For example, if someone does not feel loved by a parent early in life, he or she might live many years bargaining to make that reality not be true. If only I were prettier, thinner, smarter, we can just fill in the blank. The love would be there. Then he or she finds other people with whom to live out that bargain, hoping to ward off the reality of what was lost a long time ago. For a man, if he never felt the approval and respect from his father and never grieved this loss, he can spend his entire life seeking this from employers, mentors, even his wife. Are you denying a reality lost long ago? Are you protesting something that will never come true? You can't mourn until you stop protesting the reality. Another phase of the grieving process is despair or depression, what I call the giving in. When we stop our protests and bargaining and realize what has happened is true, we begin to embrace the loss. We become aware that this reality is not going to change. Wish and reality meet. We wanted it, and it is gone. This is the death experience, the experience no one wants. The sadness of this reality begins to kick in. So we ward this one off, either by reverting to more bargaining or protest, or by acting out some other way. Some try drugs, a new relationship, a return to an old one, more trying to perform, or whatever other mechanism is available to help us get away from the truth. The next phase is what I believe is probably the most important experience, and that would be sadness, loss, and grief proper, letting go and saying goodbye. When we hit bottom, when we realize that this really is true, we, quote, lose it, we break, and we cry. This sadness is the letting go of the reality. It's the beginning of true healing as well. We are letting go of what cannot be. Reality and our heart, mind, and soul have all come together, and we cry. Tears are shed, and after many, many tears, we let go. I will never have it, so I will let go of the wish. We must enter this pain voluntarily. This is the most important pain there is. It heals, restores, changes things that have gone bad. It's the place we receive comfort. Ecclesiastes 7, verses 2 through 4 in the New Living Translation reads, "Better to spend your time at funerals than at parties. After all, everyone dies, so the living should take this to heart. Sorrow is better than laughter, for sadness has a refining influence on us. A wise person thinks a lot about death, while a fool thinks only about having a good time." So how long does this last, this sadness, the grief proper? Well, it varies depending on the loss, and each person grieves differently. The first year is by far the toughest. Give grievers permission to take as long as they need. How does grief affect us physically? We often experience more tiredness, lack of concentration, even shortness of breath. Some grievers have expressed they think they're going crazy. They feel panicky. Some describe grief as having two cement blocks tied together hanging around their neck. Or the description that I most related to was feeling like I had an elephant sitting on my chest. If you've grieved a loss, you get that. The last part of the grieving process is resolution and resurrection. Understanding and becoming available. The sadness goes away. Ecclesiastes 3 verse 4 says, "There's a time to cry and a time to laugh, a time to grieve and a time to dance." The heart is now available for new things, new desires, new attachments, new hope, new energy. We bring the learning, understanding, and experience from the old into the new. Whether good or bad, what was lost was an experience, and from it we take understanding and wisdom for the rest of our lives. The process is complete, the person has grown, and the past is now the past, and it is not affecting the present except in greater wisdom or the pleasant memories of a loved one who has passed on. The death experience has given way to the resurrection of a new life. I believe God created our souls to grieve. It's the way to finish or complete the bad stuff in life. If grieving is good for us, why is it that some people don't grieve? Well, I believe the emotions associated with grief aren't pleasant. We feel out of control, vulnerable, confused, despairing, overwhelmed with sorrow. It's countercultural to choose to be in pain. Another reason we choose not to grieve is we need support to grieve. We can't let down and let go if nothing is there to hold us up. Grieving requires internal and external support. Romans 12:15 says, "Mourn with those who mourn." We need love, support, and comfort to grieve. Another reason we don't grieve is we need time and space for grieving. We stay far too busy and don't take the time to grieve. This is a reason grief support groups can be very helpful. They provide the time, space, and even the tasks to do that structure the experience. And finally, I believe some don't grieve because grief work is hard work. It's physically, emotionally, and mentally exhausting. But if you do the work, the rewards are invaluable and priceless. If you don't grieve, you'll suffer greatly. This concludes Class 2. Some of this material I gained from the book, How People Grow. Chapter 11, on the role of suffering and grief, and the book is by Dr. Henry Cloud and Dr. John Townsend.